Hello, friends. Welcome to a special episode of the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Pastor Bob Thune of Columbia Church. I don't have my usual podcast partners here with me. Our travel schedules are doing some odd things at the beginning of this summer, the end of this spring, and so there's just some weeks where we're not all in the same room together, and so I am recording a special conversation today, not with Dusty and Chris, my usual partners, but with the Jacobs, who you'll meet in a moment. And so we're sitting down to have a special conversation. This is the Wednesday Conversation AI debate. That's what this conversation is going to be. So let me introduce my colleagues who are here with me. First of all, Jacob Willis, Corumdeo's brand new director of production, just joined the team. Welcome, Jacob Willis.
Hello.
This is the first time he's been on this podcast or
very first
a podcast.
Yeah.
Have very you been on podcast other podcasts? Ever. This is it.
This is it.
Welcome to your maiden voyage. Yeah. Welcome. Jacob is actually in charge of everything related to podcasting at Corumdeo. So
I stay behind the scenes.
I was going to say, this is your job now, is being responsible for all these kinds of things. Also, Jacob Tevis. Welcome, Jacob. Pastoral resident, new to the Corumdeo team, and a uniquely knowledgeable person when it comes to AI. Before you decided to become a pastoral resident and pursue a calling toward Christian ministry, you've served for 10 years as an attorney.
Yep.
And some of your jobs most recently have been in Silicon Valley in some, I would call them AI adjacent kinds of fields. Is that right?
Yeah. I used to call them AI before AI was cool companies.
Yeah.
So they were specifically robotics companies, drones. So flying autonomous robots that were using a lot of the same kind of underlying math, underlying systems that then have become popular as LLMs took off. They were just using it for spatial reasoning and all kinds of other things, developing some of those same techniques before it got to language.
What that means, listeners, is that Jacob Tevis is sort of an AI expert in some way, not at the level of programming AI, but at the level of knowing a lot of the use cases for it and how it sort of is being used and will be used in the future.
Yeah.
And so here's the context for the debate we want to have. We have talked about AI multiple times on the Wednesday Conversation, and one of the questions I think that Christians have to wrestle with is, what does a Christian approach to AI look like? How should we think about this as Christians? Is this a tool that's neutral that we should use? Is this a negative thing that we should stay away from? How should we, granted that the world we live in is going to become more and more AI dependent, and it's going to be more and more a part of our lives, how ought Christians to relate to artificial intelligence and the tools that use artificial intelligence? And so what happened is we had a staff event a week or two ago at a little pub across the street. Jacob Tevis and I were having this long debate at a table full of people where Jacob was like, I think Christians can use AI. This is great. And I was like, I'm a little more skeptical. And we had this long debate and we were like, actually, this is the debate that we need to have on the Wednesday Conversation, because we're talking about all the things that everybody in our church is asking about. We're just doing it at a table where none of them are here, and that's not very helpful.
Yep.
So you were like, well, let's just do this on the podcast.
I think that was your idea, but I was excited about it.
Look, here's the debate. So if we're going to frame the debate proposition, we're going to treat this like high school debate, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The debate proposition is Christians can and should use artificial intelligence tools for the common good. You're going to take the affirmative on that position. Is that a fair way of me framing the proposition?
Yeah, I think so.
Christians can and should use AI tools. Jacob yep. Tevis is going to take the affirmative and say, yeah, I think these are tools that Christians can and should use. And you were pressing me in the conversation that, hey, these are going to be all around us. So we have to be Luddites if we're going to say, I'm never going to use AI because it's in your car and it's in your phone and it's going to be in all the tools you use anyway. So you're saying Christians do need to have a right creational responsibility and ability to use AI.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm going to take the negative. I'm going to be the contrarian here and say, I think there's great problems with AI that Christians should. The problem for me is I would say opting out is going to be difficult.
Right.
So I'm not exactly sure what the should is on my side of the argument, because I realize I'm going to argue we should not use AI. We should be very, very slow and hesitant to adopt AI is another way of saying my side of the debate.
Yeah. I think the other interesting question that we definitely spent a good chunk of the time talking about is that especially as LLMs have gotten better, large language models have gotten better over the last couple of years, there's been this growing sort of perception among the users that this thing has some agency, right? That you're actually talking to something that is human-like. And we got a little bit into, okay, what is that?
I said it was demons.
Yeah, you said demons. I said, no, I think you can look at that and misattribute personality to it. But if you see personality in it, you're wrong. Yeah. And so that would be the other maybe angle we could get to at some point in the debate. But I think those, because those are related, but they're not exactly the same question.
Lovely. So I'm going to let you start us out. Before we do, I'm going to let you know, as listeners, this is probably going to be a two-episode debate. So we're probably going to cut it right down the middle. We'll have the first half of the debate on this episode, the second half on a following episode, because I think there's plenty here to talk about. But I wanted to start us out with one of the concerns that I have related to AI, and just a place where I think this debate becomes very, very live for every person listening, and that is in the realm of education. Mm-hmm. The Intelligencer, which is a publication of New York Magazine, had an article a couple weeks ago, and the title was, "Everyone is Cheating Their Way Through College." It's a long-form article that's just basically pointed out AI has utterly changed the college experience. And if any of you are college professors or work at a university or have students in college, you know that this is true. I'm going to read a few quotes from this article just because what this article gets at is sort of the fundamental question. Is this a tool that can be used in an ethical way? Or is this going, is the inclination of this tool going to take us in unethical directions? And this is a question mm-hmm. that every Christian is going to have to wrestle with. It starts out by talking about this student at Columbia University who basically just decided he's going to do every assignment using AI. And his argument is most assignments in college are not relevant. They're hackable by AI, and I just had no interest in doing them. So this is a student who's smart enough to go, I know the university says I can't use AI, but I'm going to do it because assignments aren't relevant anyway. And so the article sort of traces out this guy's brought under discipline by Columbia, but then he's arguing with the university because Columbia University has itself a partnership with ChatGPT. Mm-hmm. And so he's like, hey, I'm just using a tool that officially our university has a partnership with. So how can you tell me it's okay for you to have a partnership with OpenAI that makes ChatGPT, but I can't use a tool that they have created that's meant to be used? Here are some of the stats. In January 2023, just 2 months after OpenAI launched ChatGPT, a survey of 1,000 college students found that nearly 90% of them had used the chatbot to help with homework assignments. College is just how well I can use ChatGPT at this point, a student in Utah recently said. A philosophy professor at the University of Arkansas Little Rock caught students in her ethics and technology class using AI to respond to the prompt, briefly introduce yourself and say what you're hoping to get out of this class. When students are using AI to answer that prompt, you know we have a problem. The article interviews a number of college professors, and one of them who teaches at Cal State Chico says this: massive numbers of students are going to emerge from university with degrees and into the workforce who are essentially illiterate. And that's the concern that professors have, is that, sure, this is an efficient way to get an essay written. The problem is it's working around literacy and wisdom and growth. Mm-hmm. I could read a lot more quotes from this article, and maybe they'll be relevant in the debate we're going to have. But I just wanted to read that as a way of saying this is far from sort of an abstract, ethereal, ethical debate that's just interesting to people who want to debate ethics. But this is actually a very real time. If you're a parent of a student or you're involved in any kind of education, this is going to be an ongoing real time question. How and when and why and what are the parameters within which we can use AI ethically and constructively? And in what ways does it become destructive and damaging? So mm-hmm. Jacob, why don't you kick us off and take us to your, I guess you can start either direction. You can take that first question or that second one that was kind of related and just tell us, like, all right, what's your best case for why Christians should embrace AI as a tool?
Sure. I mean, I think maybe responding to the article that you just mentioned, maybe something for us to agree on going into the debate, just to limit scope a little bit. I think there's a question about sort of the ethics of, should I use AI when I'm not supposed to? That is almost different than what we're really going after here. And so, like, in that situation, if you're a student at Columbia, like, what work are you there to do? Because if you think the work you're there to do is to turn in essays and get a grade, then there's something more broken than the existence of AI in that system.
Right? I would disagree with you, but go on.
Okay. So I would take the position on that, that the purpose of that education is, in fact, to educate that student. It is for that student to grow. And I think one of the really uncomfortable truths about AI in education is that it is going to make life much, much harder for educators. Like, you need to figure out a way to teach skills that are actually useful and relevant with the existence of these tools.
Okay.
So the fundamental question is a little bit different there. And I say that because I think part of my vision for how Christians should be engaging AI goes to those educators even. So just to give you an example, let's say I'm teaching a college English class, English literature class. I could assign a bunch of things that I know ChatGPT could do and tell the students not to do it, and then try to hunt down whether or not they've used it. Or I could have students turn in something where the objective of the assignment was, write this using ChatGPT. And then I could force them to edit and realize and figure out what the problems are with the way that ChatGPT put that essay together, as a way of trying to teach them to critique something.
So it sounds like your essential, and I don't want to get ahead of you, but it sounds like your essential case here is going to be, AI is a tool. Our job is to use the tool in a responsible and ethical way, and to help it advance learning and growth and flourishing.
Yes, I think so. Especially as Christians, you know, we talked about this a little bit before we started taping, but there's a sense in which this is just the product of human desire to work, human creativity. This is people looking at all of that sort of underlying math that's been done over the last 20 years and finding a new application for it. And in that sense, like, there's some real potential advancement happening here. Like, this is actually part of the story of, you know, we're not suddenly taking a U-turn on the redemptive historical timeline from creation, fall, redemption, consummation. Like, we're still headed toward consummation. And this is something that's coming along. And it feels dangerous and scary and, you know, potentially problematic, the same way that the Industrial Revolution did, and the same way that Google did, and, you know, the internet more broadly speaking. And so I think the question is really not whether we can turn back the tide, but what do we do now?
By the way, if you're a listener, half the time I actually agree with what Jacob Tevis is saying. The reason I want this debate to happen is because actually he says things I'm like, that's persuasive to me. And one of the things you just said is, okay, the AI revolution is similar to the Industrial Revolution or the birth of the internet. It's just a new technology that is moving things forward and that will change things. Our job is to ask, how can we use it responsibly and ethically for the glory of God and for human flourishing in the world? And what I appreciate about you is you press that question in helpful ways for me, in ways that sort of make me challenge my own assumptions. Sorry to interrupt. Please go on.
Yeah. So I would kind of, I mean, just to put us like, maybe to give us a helpful historical framework for the moment that we're in, think about some of those people who were opening up the first factories in the Industrial Revolution. The nature of work is changing completely at that point, right? You have people who have been, you know, maybe farmers around their home for hundreds of years, where, you know, kids not only watched dad go out and like do all the work, but were actively engaged in going out with dad and doing the work to try to support the family all the time. And now you get into a situation where more and more of those families have parents who are going off to a factory all day to go do the work and then come home. If you're a factory owner in that situation, like, those machines, those tools are coming. They're enabling increased productivity, which leads to human flourishing, right? Like, you can actually produce better goods at lower cost, which means more people can have better goods. Like, you can raise sort of that quality of life. So I think what we're hunting for, what I'm proposing we hunt for, is to try to approach AI in that same way. Like, how can this actually, what can we harvest from this that helps us push forward human flourishing in a way that doesn't denigrate the humanity of the people who are using it and the people who are being affected by it?
Do I get to make my counterpoint now?
I think I've been talking long enough.
No, you haven't. You have much more to say. But my counterpoint to your argument has been this. Industrial Revolution and internet were both democratizing things, right? The Industrial Revolution began with inventors and companies and factories that could innovate new tools, but eventually everybody had a tractor, right? Or everybody had a running water. I mean, eventually the Industrial Revolution trickled down to most of us now have benefited from the technologies that were innovated. It's a democratizing influence. Same thing with the internet, right? Used to be you had to have a college campus level, you know, internet connection to even be connected to the internet. Now we all have it in our homes and we have it on our phones and it's everywhere and it's democratized information. My argument here is AI is something categorically different from that. It is tools owned by someone, programmed by programmers, developed by some company. Now, I realize one of the debates in AI right now is it going to be open source or closed source? And mm-hmm. there's companies and models pushing in both directions. Open source means everybody is going to have access to be able to modify it. Closed source means I own this technology and only my programmers can modify it. But wherever that goes, my contention is I think we're talking about something fundamentally different from those other two revolutions, because those were democratizing. I think this is much more of an oligarchy. It's much more of an elite thing, because whoever programs the AI gives it its capacity. And I cannot program it. I do not have the skill set to do that. I can get on the internet and do a search for things, but AI itself is not a democratizing technology. That's my pushback. So I'm going to argue this is not a question of, this is just a tool that we should use. It's not actually a tool. That's my argument. It is a product owned by a very narrow sector of companies and society.
Interesting. So to put it, just to make sure we're speaking the same language, to put it in Industrial Revolution terms, you are viewing AI more like one of the products that came out of the Industrial Revolution, and I'm viewing it more like the machines that enabled the Industrial Revolution. Is that fair?
Perhaps.
Or if I think about Google, I mean, you didn't have the capacity to write a search engine.
Correct.
Back in the late 90s and early 2000s.
Correct. And actually, Google, this is going to be part of my argument. I think the danger of artificial intelligence, but also of the internet, is that it feels like we all have access to things. It feels like an open door when actually it's a filter. So I don't know if you saw this, but last week a study came out that Google has now slowed down their search feature, meaning they don't give you the best results on the first page, because they figured out if they don't do that, you'll spend more time on the initial search and they can show you more ads. Mm-hmm. So basically, Google has, by their own financial incentive, decided to make it harder for you to find the information you want, because mm-hmm. they make more money that way. I think the average person who pulls up Google just assumes if I type in coffee shop near me, it's going to show me the coffee shops near me. But actually, Google has a vested interest in what they're doing on the backside of that, driven by a profit motive. And my argument is AI is the same thing. So the danger with these technologies is we experience them as seamless. It's just like, oh, I just searched for this thing and here's what I found. But actually, someone on the backside is manipulating that. And that's unique.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's maybe another point of agreement that we can suss out in this debate is that
Well, that's no fun. Let's stop agreeing. Let's start disagreeing.
I'm just trying to narrow scope.
I'm just kidding.
Let's put it that way. Which is that one thing that I think almost unequivocally espouse within my responsible use sort of argument is that as an AI user, I should always be skeptical of the tool.
Okay.
That is, for anybody who's sort of studied how they work, but then also the results that they tend to give, you must do that. So I think there is a healthy skepticism that is inherent to even being a good user.
Great.
So I think we can align on blind trust of the AI is not what I'm espousing. And I would
not accuse you of espousing that, but I think where I'm going to push back is to say, I think you think responsible use is possible. And I would say responsible use is not possible.
Sure. So
maybe what do you think about that, Jacob Willis? You're making faces at me over there.
I think that responsible use is going to be very hard in a sinful world.
Yeah, that's my functional contention. So I think I'm interested to hear you make the case, Jacob Tevis, for the Christian of like, yeah, there is an approach to responsible use of AI.
Yeah.
What does that look like? What is responsible use in your mind?
Sure.
How do you get it across to the average Christian, the average person out there to actually do that way? Because I could see, we've talked about this a little bit, right, Jacob? So I can see the use. I can also see it going sideways really quick as far as hiding things, playing things like the students are doing in schools where they're like pretending it's their own work.
Yeah.
It's really easy to just do it all in the dark.
Yeah. Yeah. I think let's maybe do two things here. One, I'll just say and kind of leave it there. I think we need responsible, thoughtful, smart Christians building the tools.
Agreed. And I think if I thought that was possible, I would agree with your side of the argument.
So, well,
Jacob wants a massive revival in Silicon Valley such that everybody writing AI code is a Christian. And in that case, I would feel pretty good about it.
Don't you?
Yeah, of course I do. But I don't think it's possible. Okay. Possible is the wrong word. I don't think it's likely.
Yeah, I'm less thinking about that and more thinking about, let's say you are that kid who's in college right now and you're trying to figure out like, wow, I kind of like this technology is super interesting to me. What should I do? Like maybe what you should do is actually be one of the people who's building these tools so that they are designed for human flourishing if you end up buying my argument that that's possible. Okay, so I'll just say that. I guess to give you a picture of responsible use, why don't I just give you a picture of my life right now and the ways that I use it.
Good.
So I have a couple of things going on right now. I am a pastoral resident here at Cormdale. That involves seminary education. It involves working on sermons. It involves working on other sort of written material. I would say that there are good, healthy Christian ways to use it, even in that specific kind of work, that are very different from the sort of auto-plagiarism that you can do by just like having it write something for you and then claiming it as your own. So just to give you an example of some of the ways that I've used it in seminary training, and that I was very relieved to see when RTS put out a use of AI policy, we're totally fine. They actually did that 3 months ago, maybe. And I think Dr. Kara said something like, I'm really sorry that I have to be saying something like this at all, but this is the moment we're living in. So here's the ways you can use it, and here's the way you can't. So ways that we can use it within that world. The Bible is a fixed, closed system of literature. What these LLMs do really, really well is digest large volumes of content and then basically act as a better Google for that content. What I mean by better Google is not necessarily that they're more accurate. They're not, because they actually have, it's called heat in the industry, but like they have creativity built in. So if you start playing with open source models on your own, like if you use Ollama or one of those other tools, there will be a slider you can actually direct where a zero is completely deterministic. It's just going to give you the results of the math. And a one is like a hippie. Like it's going to go from engineer to hippie, maybe it'd be the way to put it. So it's going to tell you the answer to the question that you asked sort of as dryly and in a limited way as possible. Or it's going to imitate as much human creativity as it can possibly put into that answer. And so depending on what you're doing, you slide different points along that meter. That's reflective of the fact that AI is fundamentally trained on human creativity. Like if you just ask sort of what is this output that I'm getting, it's a bunch of math querying basically a database of text. Some math happening in the background, and that math is all designed to try to mimic what humans do. So it's literally just trying to calculate at the most basic level. If you feed it one word, it's trying to run a probability analysis to figure out what the next word is and then giving you that word. And it's just doing that over and over and over again.
Which is how the predictive texting works on your phone, right? When it's giving you a word, it's saying, based on the last word you typed, here's what I think is next.
Yeah,
is that
it's right? Similar to that.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's just trained on a much larger corpus, and, right. and it's doing more with it.
So how do you, go back to how you use it with the scriptures.
Yeah. So with scripture, one thing I found it can be really helpful with is some basic questions where, again, I'm not going to necessarily trust the output, but I'm going to use it as a critical thinking tool to help me work through something. So for example, in my Genesis class, I remember Dr. Belcher identified maybe 5 or 6 sort of main ways of understanding Genesis 1. And I fall into one of those camps. I don't understand all of the other camps really well, but when I was going into it and he was starting to lecture on it, I wanted kind of a breakdown of like, hey, what do they think on these 5 different variables of sort of like things that can be different in different people's views of Genesis? And I want to know who the representative authors are of each of those views. So imagine I'm looking at Genesis 1, I want a table that tells me like, okay, do they hold to a 24-hour day? Do they think these are in order? Do they, like those types of questions? And you can go ask something like ChatGPT, hey, here's what I want to know. Go look at the canon of literature that's out there and tell me, like give it the rows, give it the columns, and have it spit out for you. Yeah, here's what these people say, and here's what's actually there. So as a research tool, that was super, super helpful for me to orient myself as I was then diving into the lecture and diving into the textbooks to be like, oh, okay, these are the kind of categories that people are operating in.
Yeah.
Trying to give...
You're describing like a really good research assistant.
Yes.
Yeah. When I did the good faith debate on gun control, mm-hmm. I paid a graduate level researcher at an East Coast university a fee to do this kind of work for me. I said, hey, go mm-hmm. tell me all the First Amendment all the Second Amendment arguments that have been made by Christians, you know, frame up for me sort of the field of thought in this area, because I want to know what I'm wading into. So that was 4 years ago. Now I could do the same thing. Just ChatGPT could functionally do that same thing for me.
Yep.
Is kind of how you're using it.
Yep. And you would need to go through and verify outputs. So like I remember it got one of those wrong.
Right.
And I like found it out as I was going through and actually doing the research, but having it give me the landscape was still helpful. The other thing that I do now is I run a solo law firm on the side. It's called SDG Legal Studio. And in that work, I'm very open and upfront with my clients about the fact that I do use particular AI tools in particular ways because it makes me dramatically more efficient and therefore affordable for the work that I'm doing for them. A particular tool that I use that is not a sponsor of this podcast is called GCAI. And what I love about GCAI is the founder's perspective on all of this. So she actually says, you need to treat this thing like a smart intern.
Right.
Like your conversations, I'm doing air quotes, with this thing should be the same conversations that you would have with a smart intern, which is you're going to give them a whole bunch of busy work that you don't want to do. And then you're not going to trust anything they bring back as far as like being sort of gospel truth.
Yeah.
They're just going to help you see the landscape. So it's very good at doing that. I use that to do that for contracts. I use it to do that for, hey, I need to draft an internal policy dealing with X for this particular client. It's got access to hundreds of those through whatever means, and it can actually do some comparisons and be like, well, this is a fairly small company. Here's some things they care about, and it will put together a good starting point for me to then work from as I go and I actually edit it.
What you're describing, I think you're not stating it in terms of a debate, but you're giving a good framework for here's some examples of responsible use of AI that I'm using it as just a sort of research tool, a better Google to use your language. Mm-hmm. My pushback is going to be this. So my counter argument is this. I think that assumes to take the posture you're taking of like, hey, Christians should just be able to use this responsibly, assumes two things. One, it assumes that I am using it that the only way I would use it is the way you're talking about, right? That I understand what it means to do research in a meaningful, high-level way. You're a guy that has a law degree. I'm a guy with a seminary degree. We've both done high-level research before AI tools existed.
Yep.
So we know the thing we're trying to do. We're just using a tool to do that thing.
Yep.
So it assumes a baseline level of understanding and wisdom that lies below the use of that tool.
Yes.
And second, it assumes that the tool itself is essentially neutral. And what I want to argue is I think the problem for Christians, the reason I think this is going to become a significant problem, it's the same ethical dilemma you have with all the things happening in the world of reproductive technology, all the things happening with transhumanism. The question is, it does not ask the question, should we use this? You're only asking the question, can we use this ethically? If you're asking me to answer the question, can a Christian use an AI tool ethically? I'm going to answer, yes, they can. If you're asking me, should a Christian use an AI tool? I'm going to answer the question, I'm not sure I can answer that as clearly, and here's why. Because I think the use of the tools themselves, the collective effect of that is going to take us in a direction that's detrimental to human flourishing. So my pushback on your argument is it's very individualistic. It assumes an individual Christian asking the question, can I use AI in my work and do it ethically?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
The broader question of if everybody in the world used AI tools, where does that take society? Mm-hmm. I think that's the reason why Christians need to say, nope, we should be very hesitant to embrace the AI revolution, because I actually think there are downstream effects societally for all of us that will make it very, very detrimental to human flourishing. Let me read a little paragraph from this article that I think illustrates my point. This is from the New York Magazine article on how AI is affecting learning. The author is writing about a college student named Wendy who needs to write an essay for her composition class. Whenever Wendy uses AI to write an essay, which is to say whenever she writes an essay, she follows three steps. Step one, I say, I'm a first-year college student. I'm taking this English class. Otherwise, she says, it will give you a very advanced, complicated writing style, and you don't want that. Step two, Wendy provides some background on the class she's taking before copy and pasting her professor's instructions into the chatbot. Step three, then I ask, according to the prompt, can you please provide me an outline or an organization to give me a structure so that I can follow and write my essay? It then gives me an outline, introduction, topic sentences, paragraph one, paragraph two, paragraph three. Sometimes Wendy asks for a bullet list of ideas to support or refute a given argument. I have difficulty with organization, she says, and this makes it really easy for me to follow. Once the chatbot had outlined Wendy's essay, she delivered a tidy five-page paper on time. When I asked her how she did on the assignment, she said she got a good grade. I really like writing, she said. You learn a lot. You have to think, oh, what can I write in this paragraph, or what should my thesis be? But I'd rather get good grades. An essay with ChatGPT, it's just like it gives you straight up what you have to follow. You just don't really have to think that much. What I hear Wendy doing is using the tool exactly like you're saying. Hey, the creative work is still hers. She's just saying, give me an outline, give me a structure, help me get started writing this essay. Would I consider that unethical? Probably not. The bulk of the essay is still her work. I could see my own kids doing this. I'm like, I have a trouble getting started writing an essay. Give me the thesis. Give me the paragraphs. Tell me how it should be organized. Then I'll fill in the content. The problem is what she says at the end. You really just don't have to think that much. I actually think building the outline for an essay is part of what wisdom and knowledge requires. And I think there's going to be so much of that, so much shortcutting, that in my opinion, it moves us away from human flourishing, and we end up in a world where no one actually does their own work because the AI will kind of shortcut it for us.
Yeah.
I think of Wall-E.
Yeah, Wall-E is a good example.
Yeah. All the guys just sitting in the chairs.
Yeah. All right, before we end this podcast, and we're going to defer the rest of this debate till next week, Jacob, what's your outgoing statement if you want to say, okay, come back and listen to me say more next week. What are we going to hear you say next week about the responsible use of AI?
AI is not a demon.
Oh, wow.
I mean, that's where I've been stuck ever since it was mentioned earlier.
Yeah. When you come
tell
back,
me more.
Yeah, when you come back next week, I'm going to tell you why I think the demonic is going to be a problem when we think about AI. So come back next week for round two of this debate. We'll see you then.